Hello and welcome to episode 1285 of The Sleeper and the Bust. It is Friday, April 19th. I'm your host, Paul Spohr, joined this morning by Justin Mason. Justin, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How you doing?
Not too bad. Well rested, coming off the short slate. And you got some sleep, too. We were just talking about yesterday about going to bed early, and you went to bed before midnight.
Look at me making improvements. I mean, it helps, when there's only four games on the slate. And I'm like, oh, okay, I can finish the Rona write-up. Like, I think the last game ended at, 9:30 my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, y'all's game.
Yeah, I mean, I could just knock out the entire thing before 10:30 and get in bed, and I was in bed by 11. So it was great.
That is fantastic. Yeah, got some good sleep. I was bummed that Cubs?
Yeah.
Marlins? Is that who they were playing?
I can't remember. No, Marlins. We were playing them back.
Yeah, that's right. Cubs Marlins got rained out, which again, bummer because there were so few games anyway. But now we get an Friday afternoon game, although that might have already been there because the only team that plays on Friday afternoon are the Cubs at home. Mm-hmm. And so that might have already been there. And then, it is because the second game is actually going to be tomorrow. Anyway, let's talk about one game from yesterday. And just I want to see where you're at on a particular guy. He did not go out and do the thing where he puts up the great start and then everyone's going to be freaking out at Fab. Quite the opposite. Jack Leiter got knocked around for 3 2/3, giving up 8 hits, 3 walks, 7 runs to my Tigers. I think it does sting a bit more than it was the Tigers, because they have not been hitting well. So I'm sure that kind of makes it feel even worse for Jack Leiter. It had been three starts, I think, or actually 2 starts and an extended relief appearance. I don't know what was going on with that, if it was an opener or something like that, but it was kind of weird. But either way, 14 and a third innings of really good work. The velo was up 1 mph, which he held that velocity gain in the majors, Jack Leiter did. He had a 44% K rate, 5% walk, 16% swinging strike. Again, 14 innings, but big advancement in what we'd seen from Jack Leiter. So he gets the call. We get excited in Detroit against the Tigers. Total flop. What are you doing this weekend with Jack Leiter? Do you have any interest? I don't know if they sent him right back down, which of course would make this moot. But I think he's sticking around, right? Because
I think so.
He can just take Bradford's spot.
Yeah, I think he's just taking Bradford's spot for it. Well, yeah. I mean, they also have Lorenzen, though, now. Ooh.
So, no, Lorenzen, Gray, Dunning, Leiter, Eovaldi. Oh, Heaney. Okay, so they do still have 6. Okay, let's assume Leiter
right now. Up. Right now, he's projected to start Thursday versus the Mariners.
Okay.
So,
Where are you on Leiter after the debut? If we get word this weekend that he's staying up, let's go with that first, and then we can talk about if he's not.
I'll probably put some bids in, but they're not going to be aggressive. As much as I love the arm talent, just generally speaking, the stuff is pretty good. The command and control is not great. And I don't know how long he's going to be up for. Bradford went to the IL with, lower back soreness, which doesn't to me sound like something that should keep him out for super long. So, I mean, this may be a 2-week test trial for Jack Leiter, and he's going back down to the minors unless he just shoves. And I just don't know that he's got, especially the control, to shove the way that he would probably need to stay up on the roster. So, I don't want to overinvest. I'm sure there are going to be people who throw triple digit bids this weekend. I think those are mistakes.
Yeah, I tend to think so, too. And again, it's really not just because he got beat up by the Tigers. Even though that is not wonderful, that is not the driving force here. It really is the lack of confidence I have that he's here for quite some time. So, that's where I'm at with Jack Leiter as well. And because they have the 6 right now, I can't even necessarily be confident that he's going to be here next week. Because any Gray, Dunning, Heaney, Eovaldi, Lorenzen could be their 5. So, was a good soft spot for a debut. Unfortunately, did not go Jack Leiter's way. Could see him back up, more consistently in the summer. I'm going to keep some real tempered bids, if anything. Yeah. And we'll see what kind of news we get this weekend that would clarify it. Maybe keep the bids very little if he's just sent right back out.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into some two-step guys. A few that we talked about yesterday, we'll just follow up, make sure that we're still cool on them, especially in case people didn't listen to yesterday's episode. So we can't assume that, you know, everyone knows what we think about Singer and Detmers already. And then, of course, I don't include the obvious guys, which, by the way, made a move. Made a guy into an obvious that I'm very excited about, but I did not expect on April 19th to already have Reynaldo Lopez in the no need to discuss obvious. But with Miami, Cleveland both at home, where aren't you starting him? There's nowhere. So that's why you won't hear about guys like that. You know, normally this
is the third week in a row that he's had a scheduled two start.
Really? So he just keeps missing them. I know. Yeah. I've been recalling some other guys that are like, oh,
remember, because like he originally was supposed to have like a Chicago and Miami two start or something like that. And then
they had a rainout this week, right?
They've had rainouts like every week. It got bumped to like a really crappy, like maybe it was like Texas Houston or something like that.
That's right. Houston was part of it. And he, you know, he did his thing against Houston. Raylo did. That's right. He lost the New York. You're 100% right here. I pulled it up. He lost the New York Mets at Miami because of the rain to get at Houston home to Texas. But then a rainout this week means it was just Houston. And now it shifts to Miami, Cleveland. So we're not doing it for the third week. The matchups are right. We're going for it. And we'll talk about him next week at Seattle, at the Dodgers, if this one gets pushed. But right now, actually, I don't know if we would talk about it, because right now, Raylo's not going anywhere. So that's why he's not included. And there's other guys like that, too. You know, Hauk, I think, would be a graduation onto this list. And we did talk a good bit about him yesterday. You know, your Grayson Rodriguez is certain guys. Other guys I want to ask you about that might feel obvious in name value, but performance maybe isn't there, and we'll get to some of those guys later. But this one, firmly on the having to question list, especially in 10s and 12s, and maybe even 15s, man. I know you've been a Brandon Faught guy. I have been too. We have promoted him. He is sketchy, right? I mean, I think that's the only way I can say it right now. At St. Louis, at Seattle, a couple nice venues, decent lineups. He's toting a 20% strikeout minus walk, which we love. The 3% walk rate's excellent. Part of living in the zone like that for Faught, though, is that he's a home run machine, and it's at 1.5 this year, which is actually a stark improvement over last year, believe it or not, at 2.1. But 1.5 is still untenable, Justin. So I look at the 5.32 ERA and the 1.23 WHIP, and that's, you know, that WHIP is better than that ERA should be, and the 3.44 Sierra agrees, but it's the homers with Faught. What do we think of him here at St. Louis, at Seattle?
I mean, I think you're probably still doing it in 15s, unless you just have him unreal pitching staff. It's just so hard to pass up on kind of a two-start guy like this, and against offenses that are good but not like clicking on all cylinders right now.
I figured out the way I put it, like, because I put this for a team in the SP chart yesterday. I respect them, but I don't fear them.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that either of these teams could hit Brandon Faught, but they are not.
And one of them just did. Yeah. I mean, he faced St. Louis in his third start. And
exactly.
He gave up a 6-earned run. So there's definitely some risk to this one. But
they are not the reason to pass him. If you're passing Faught, it's because of his skills in the home run situation, not because of the matchups. So 15s, I'm with you. I think you almost have to, unless you've got the miracle staff right now, in which case, nicely done. 12s, 10s, where are we at there? What kind of consideration are we? Because we bounced back nicely from the St. Louis outing with 7 innings of 3-run ball, 2 of them earned against the Cubbies. How are we doing on Faught in the shallower formats?
I think in a 10, you're probably not starting him. In a 12, I really think it depends on your other options. I mean, the swing and strike rate has been at 8% in 3 of his 4 starts, which isn't bad. Super encouraging at all. Yeah, 11% so,
average. And when you're talking those low numbers, like 3 points is a big deal.
Yeah.
Versus 11.
I mean, the third or his second start, which is the one start, he didn't have an 8% swing strike rate. It was 23%. So, like, that's carrying a lot of the water of that 12% swing strike rate. So, I'm probably not starting him in 10s. I don't think I would start him in 12s unless I really didn't have any other good options. But I would take a really good one start over a bad
too.
Or, you know, a mediocre to bad two start right here.
Yeah, I think so as well with Brandon Faught. 12 teamers, there's a world, but it's really kind of a 35-65 or 65-35 with the 65 being no for me. Yeah. Like there's a 35%, you know, again, I'm trying to ballpark numbers, but I'm giving you the idea that, like, for the most part, no, you could be desperate or you could be wanting to throw it. You know, there's something about, like, you know, your guys, the guys that you went for and you drafted, you think they're breakouts. If that's your tiebreaker, I get it, right? If you're a Brandon Faught guy, cool.
Go with your
dude. Yeah. And so go with your dudes. When it's a cluster, you know, I talked about in the SP chart yesterday, like Jack Flaherty, Brian Bayo, Clark Schmidt. I didn't give any of them the over the, across the board 10s, 12s, and 15s, but I was like, all three of them are your guy types where you love Flaherty this year. Okay, cool. Or Brian Bayo or Clark Schmidt, whoever that might be for you, lean on those guys where you can. So if Faught was one of your dudes in a 12, and maybe you have three other guys that are similar to him, go for him because he was your dude and you don't want to miss a breakout two step, but you don't have to go for him. He's not like a must start by any stretch.
I just brought up my only 12. I think it's my only, or no, I have one other 12, but I brought up my online championship. Now I want to be like quite clear. Like this is a really good team. Like it's in first place in the league and it's got a fantastic.
The reason you brought it up, folks.
Yes, exactly. Right.
I'm just kidding.
But and I don't even have Faught on this roster, but there's no way I'd start him if I did have him on this roster. Okay. Right? Like I've got, you know, Pablo Lopez, Aaron Nola, Logan Gilbert, Jared Jones, Cutter Crawford, Christopher Sanchez. Am I starting him over any of those guys? Like, no, I'm not. So
I'm taking
probably in 12. I don't know if I'm taking him.
Now that's again extenuating circumstances.
It's a good roster.
Quite a rotation. He's really borderline leaning no with Faught in 12s.
Yeah.
What about Jordan Wicks? Let's jump to the Cubs. Houston at Boston. That's not terribly friendly. Again, we keep reiterating it, but I'm going to keep saying it just so people don't get hung up on the win-loss record. Houston's offense is not why they suck. This is kind of a St. Louis of last year situation. Don't look at the 6-14 record and say, well, Houston's targetable now. No, they can still get you good. Particularly lefties, which is what Wicks is. And then Boston, they're a solid team. Their pitching is kind of carrying them to their 10-10 record, but it's a lineup that can get you. The one thing I do like about them, though, is they got a billion lefties. As far as their like everyday starters, all but two are lefty. Now, they might take some of them out, but they're going to be putting in the likes of Bobby Dalbec, Pablo Reyes, and Rob Refsnyder, if that's the case. So I'm not even sure that that's a huge problem, even though they're going to be righties against Wicks. So Jordan Wicks was a your dude this year. And I'm not, I don't mean that specifically to you. I mean that somebody could be interested in coming into the year and really think, hey, this is my breakout guy. I think he's different than Faught, where we're deciding if we even want him for 15s. I don't even know if the 10 and 12 conversation is on the table for Jordan Wicks. But it's that same conversation that we were having for the 12s with Faught in 15s for Jordan Wicks. So where do you come out with him in the deep leagues? Are you finding a start for Jordan Wicks?
Oh, I mean, he's pitching okay. I mean, the ERA sucks, obviously, 5.29 ERA. But like 12 strikeouts per nine, the home run rate is really, really good. And the problem is the walks. He's walking everybody.
And you know what that's causing? A lack of volume.
Yeah.
Jordan Wicks hasn't gone five in any of his starts.
A massive whip, a 176 whip right now.
Yeah.
So
lots of hits, lots of walks, just base runners for days.
Not afraid of Boston right now. They're about middle of the pack in terms of OPS versus left-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. But I'm petrified against Houston, the third best team so far this year against left-handed pitching. Yes. So this is a no-go for me.
Yep. I just don't see it. Now, let me ask you. If you are holding Wicks in a 15, do you hit the cut button because you're not using a two-step? Or is he somebody you want to keep around at all to kind of see if things can improve? Like, where do you stand with Wicks on a more long-term, say, 2 to 3 week outlook beyond this week as a sit? And I'll tell you that he lines up for Milwaukee the following week, Jordan Wicks does.
I guess it depends on what's on the waiver wire. Like, I'm not dropping him for Jack Leiter because I think Witz has a better shot at being in the rotation 2 weeks from now than Leiter does. So, but it depends on what you could potentially be picking up. I think it's like really... Lorenzen. Yeah, I'd probably drop him for Lorenzen, but that's really close.
Edward
Cole, the strikeout rate is really intriguing. I mean, talking about 28% strikeout rate so far. The problem is he is just not going into the zone at all. Remember, we talked a lot about zone rate yesterday, and those who weren't really paying attention to the numbers, 42% zone rate is kind of league average. He's at 37. And I mean, this is why he's walking so many guys. He just can't get into the zone consistently enough. We talked about three different guys yesterday that kind of followed the Robbie Ray template, right? In terms of like, hey, I'm going to give up home runs, but I'm going to fill up the zone too. And they were all successful, right? I think that's what Witz needs to do. He needs to go, listen, I think my stuff is good enough that if I give up a couple extra home runs, at least they'll be solo shots as opposed to just walking the yard and then getting Babbitt to death. So if I was a pitching coach in Chicago, I'd be like, hey, stop trying to nibble. Just go after guys, get in the zone. But until we see that, and maybe this is a good week to kind of watch and see, hey, does he have at least a 40% zone rate in these starts? If that's not the case, then I think he's probably a cut because it's probably not going to get much better.
Yeah, I think that all makes tons of sense with Jordan Wicks. And so I have him in a deeper league. I think I might be hitting the cut button in my other main there because I don't think I'm starting him. I don't think it's there for me. And as such, I might as well get somebody else there because
I feel like I dropped him this last week, honestly.
I mean, that makes sense, right? Because it hasn't been there.
I did. I dropped him in my main event. For Matt Vierland.
The lack of five inning outings too is concerning. And it all goes back to everything you're saying about the walk rate being up. You know, too many hits, too many walks, so too many pitches, can't get deep into the game. Frustrating. Absolutely frustrating. All right, this is one I hinted at earlier where it's like the name would say, no, we gotta start him, of course. But I wanna see where you're at on Hunter Green. Andrew Abbott as well. They both get Philly and at Texas. Abbott's definitely someone to discuss. Green is more like, you know, a head scratcher. And I wrote about him in the SP chart this week, been doing those little commentary bits at the front end of the chart. And, you know, basically came to the conclusion of like, if you've got this guy, if you took the plunge with Hunter Green, you kind of have to start him always. Like, I'm not even sure that you can really make choices because you're going to get what Jeff Erickson would call whipsawed. And you're going to start the duds and you're going to sit the gems because he doesn't even have a really pronounced home road split. Like, the ERA is better on the road, but it's 487 to 443. That's somewhat negligible. It's a 4-point difference in whip, 132 to 128. Strikeout minus walk is 20% at home, 23% on the road for Hunter Green. So there's a lot of his gems are going to be at home because when he's on, he can succeed anywhere. He's got nasty stuff. When he's off, the worst team in the league can get him. He's that kind of guy. So I basically gave my answer. I think if you got him, you have to start him. You got on this ride, buckle in. But what about you? Philly and at Texas, Hunter Green, what are you doing with him? It's been rocky already.
I mean, it hasn't been that bad. Like, I mean, the overall numbers are like, what, 435 ERA and what's the whip?
Well, 435 and 131. I don't know that. I mean, he's got the 30 Ks, which helps, but that's.
Yeah, 30 Ks. I mean, this is what you signed up for.
This guy. No, I agree, but that's why I don't want to sign up because I.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to sign up either, but like, this is what you signed up for. So you shouldn't be surprised. Like, I'm sure there are people out there that are going like, what? I thought he was going to be an ace. Well, like, you know, no, like
you drafted him because he could.
The foundation to be an ace, not necessarily the foundation, but I would say the potential to be an ace is in Hunter Green. The raw stuff
is there to be an ace for
Green. But like, this is who he is, right? Like, he's a guy who's going to, you know, sometimes he's going to walk too many guys. Sometimes he's going to give up too many home runs. And sometimes he's going to get hurt. But the other times he's going to be unreal good. Like, I mean, this is one of the guys that can go out and throw a no hitter on any night, and not every pitcher in Major League Baseball can do that. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you have him, you're starting him.
So you agree, you signed up for the ride,
and go from there. I wouldn't want to start him this week, home versus Philadelphia, and then what, at the Rangers, I think.
Yeah, in Texas.
Like, I wouldn't want to start him, but this is why I don't draft him.
Exactly. And that's what it comes down to. So if you've got him, I think you go with it. You're always starting Hunter Green, and you just kind of see where it goes after the ride. What about Andrew Abbott? Obviously does not fall under that same category. Came much cheaper, you know, has similar, you know, volatility to his game, but again, came much cheaper. We're not seeing the strikeouts this year, down to 18%, and his swing strike rate cut nearly in half from 11% to 6%. I don't know what the heck's going on there. I will say he's made it at least 5 innings in all 4 of his starts. So there is that positivity there. And the ERA is great at 2.70 with a 1.07 whip. Then you look at the 4.77 Sierra or 4.44 whip, whatever you want. The ERA indicators are saying, this is a little sketchy. And it's because of the 11% strikeout minus walk. So a lot of numbers there with Abbott. The bottom line is the results have been good. The underlying skills have been a little bit suspect to back it. And I think he's riding, you know, the hot BABIP and left on base rate. Can he iron it out to be a little bit more even with things? Would you start Andrew Abbott, Philly, and at Texas in deeper formats?
No, I would not start him. So we'll just start with that. So that way, if you want to skip forward a minute or two, you're more than welcome to. But he's given up like an almost 88% zone contact, and he's inside the zone too much to be allowing the amount of contact that he is. Right? He's in the zone, you know, almost 45% of the time, and he's giving up above league average contact. So in a place like Cincinnati against a team as powerful as Philadelphia, there's no way I'd want to start him for this.
It could be scary.
Yeah. I think this is, if you're looking for a regression game from Andrew Abbott, I think now is the time.
Regression week. Texas later.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly fun either.
I'm not overly impressed by Abbott. He had such an interesting rookie season where he started off so good. Mm-hmm. And then has, since pretty much like August of last year, has kind of just looked pedestrian when you watch his starts.
In terms of skills, because again, the results have been great this year for Abbott, which creates a little bit of a disconnect.
Paul, Eno, and I have a text thread that we just kind of like throw random thoughts into a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And Eno just like randomly the other day when Abbott was starting, he goes, I just don't understand Andrew Abbott. He's like, he's got such bad and mediocre underlying skills, but somehow makes it work. And, I think I can't remember exactly what I responded with. I was like, that'll change. Like, you just can't make it work like this. Like,
especially in that environment. That's the thing. Like, being in Cincinnati, it's going to be really difficult needle to continue to thread here.
Yeah. Especially as things warm up. Like,
yes.
Right now, like, he might be able to make it work for a little bit because it's so cool and that helps, you know, damper things down a little bit. But it's going to go bad at some point and probably very quickly against these two lineups.
Yeah. If he doesn't figure out how to start missing some bats, it's going to go up quickly for Andrew Abbott, so be careful. Ben Lively battled Tanner Houck in that Maddox that Houck threw and quietly put up a nice game himself. You know, kind of got overshadowed by Houck because, you know, a Maddox is awesome. And for those that don't know, it's 99 pitches or fewer for a shutout, not 100. Got to be 99 or fewer. And Ben Lively, you know, for his part, 5 innings of 3-hit ball with a walk, 2 runs, 7 Ks, so looked solid. Is Cleveland finding something here with Ben Lively that they can turn into? He's 32, so this would be, you know, like full reclamation type guy. Not even reclamation, because that would assume a previous height that he could reach. Is it just some, you know, scrap heap find for them that you're finding any interest in with Ben Lively? It is Boston and at Atlanta, which probably negates the interest, but I am curious where you're at on Ben Lively with Cleveland.
I'd already made my decision that it was a no before you mentioned who they were going up against. So, like, I just want to, like, how is Ben Lively only 32?
Like, I kind of went the other way. I thought he was like,
oh, really?
If you'd asked me, I would have said like 28, 29, but I guess he has been around for quite some time.
Been around since 2013. Like,
yeah. And, okay.
Like, that's like, he's been around quite a long time.
You've been around for a minute, dude.
Yeah. So, well, I guess he didn't make his major league debut in 2017, but yeah.
Still, that's 7 years ago.
Yeah. Right. So
we're so old.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, no, the skills aren't great. He got a bunch of strikeouts in the game, but it was a 9% swing strike rate, around league average, the zone contact.
Would there have been matchups that you could have gotten in on with Ben Lively?
I don't think so. Is this
a skills piece too? Okay.
I mean, making sure. If he had like an Oakland, Chicago White Sox two start.
Which is like the ideal right now.
I might start myself versus them.
Yeah. Like, yeah, there's not too many guys I wouldn't give a shot on that too, just because.
So, you gotta but take those matchups. Yeah, I think he's just the placeholder until they figure someone else out.
I think that's totally fair. I put Austin Gomber on here, but then I did put LOL next to it. It's San Diego and Houston. They're both at home. We can move on. Brady Singer, we did discuss yesterday, but for those that didn't listen, we were pretty happy on him. This is a guy that, again, you've been a big fan of in the past. You talked up quite a bit last year. Still we're in this year. And things are going well. So we are in on this two-step here with, who is it again? It is Toronto and at Detroit. The at Detroit really makes it nice. Toronto, again, I respect them. I do not fear them currently. I will not run away. So Waka also gets this two-step, and I'm in on him. Thoughts on Singer and Waka? Anything to the contrary there?
No, I think you're starting both these guys in this. I think so. I mean, it would not surprise me if one or both of them got blown up in the Toronto one. Toronto does have a good lineup, but again, not one you're like running away from necessarily. And both of them, they live on the margins a little bit, right? They're gonna be ones where like their skills, especially Singer's first two starts were really, really impressive. And then second two starts have been a little less impressive. Mm-hmm. And so you do wonder like, okay, was the first two starts just a little bit of early season magic and now we're back to him being who he was? Or is this actually a real beginning of a change for Brady Singer? I'd like to think I'm buying in on Singer right now. But and then Walker is just one of those guys that like the stuff isn't overpowering, but man, he just knows how to pitch and
gets it done. Yeah. He's a classic, you know, knows how to pitch type of guy, like you said.
He's a guy who like you just keep starting until he's hurt and then you drop and then you go back and pick him up and then you start him again. And so, you know, you're not going to get more than probably like 140, 150 innings from him because he won't stay healthy. But when he's on the mound, he's usually pretty effective.
Those innings will be useful for somebody like Michael Waka. We like Singer as well. Detmer's also discussed yesterday, Baltimore, Minnesota at home. Does look like somebody who could be, you know, taking a step, turning a corner, hitting another level, whatever way you want to put it.
I think this is a really good test for Detmers, right? Like we want to see, like, again, very similar to Singer, like, you know, first couple starts were really, really good. And then the last start, the skills weren't the same. So I want to see like, hey, was that just a bump? Maybe he wasn't feeling one of his pitches or is it actually, you know, was he just kind of getting a little bit lucky in the first go around? So just something I want to keep an eye on. You're rolling with him, I think, in the majority of formats, but I definitely want to watch the numbers and his starts this week so I can make sure, like, hey, is this a real change or is this more of an aberration?
And Detmers with that Baltimore start, it'll be five straight against the AL East. Baltimore twice, Boston twice, and Tampa Bay.
It still hasn't had a... I kind of miss the, like...
The old schedule?
You get the old schedule.
Yeah, I mean, where you play the hell out of your division.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily mind it, so I didn't, like, need the change, but I'm also not, like, upset about the change either.
I mean, I do like that you get to play different teams, especially in the other, like I know a lot of the purists out there are like, oh, I hate interleague, but like, no, I mean,
couldn't care less.
I love it. I love seeing two teams that you wouldn't necessarily think should be playing each other. So
definitely agree with that.
Yeah, but I do kind of miss the 17 games? So 19.
19,
games,
so. I think.
19, yeah, 19.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you would go crazy against your own division. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love Detmers fully in, starting him everywhere. And agree, I want to, you know, I'm going to keep monitoring it to see if are we taking a step here or are we just running hot. But to that point, he's just not coming out of the lineup.
Yeah.
Joe Ross and Wade Miley from Milwaukee both get at Pittsburgh and home to the Yankees. So not an easy setup. You know, again, Pittsburgh, we're starting to respect, definitely not fearing them, but we know that they're not a walkover even when you go to Pittsburgh. And then, of course, the Yankees can always bomb you out. So let's start with Joe Ross. You know, righty-lefty, I don't want to say versions of each other because Ross still brings it a bit more than somebody like Miley, but neither guy is terribly overpowering. Joe Ross, been around forever, and maybe it feels even longer because of his brother Tyson Ross, but he's been around since 2015.
He's younger than Ben Lively.
Ben Lively. I was just about to say that. That's crazy. He's 31. But what do you think about Joe Ross? I loved Tyson Ross. I've been a Joe Ross fan, so I'm kind of a sucker for this. I'm kind of intrigued in deeper leagues. I don't think we need to talk 12s and 10s with Joe Ross because I don't think we're getting there with him. But what about 15-team leagues for Joe Ross?
The walks are so concerning. I mean, and it's...
Understandably. But he had a 7% walk rate last year in 108 innings. Maybe he can tap back into that.
He's just given up so much contact. It's a 90% zone contact rate.
And you can't do both, right? You can't be giving up the walks and...
Because you're just going to get BABIP to death.
Yeah.
Like, it just...
And then there's going to be runners on already that you gave the free passes to.
Yeah.
And then you're really in deep shit.
He hasn't given up a home run yet, and that was the problem last year. So maybe he's trying the Robbie Ray thing where, like, hey, I'm going to fill up the zone a little bit more, and I'm going to, you know, make you hit it. But these two teams are dangerous. Like, I'm just not gonna roll with either Miley or Joe Ross here.
I'm a little bit more in. I'm like a 55-45 to the yes on Joe Ross and a 15-teamer. Simply put, you know, I don't know if you've gone through free agency yet and started to look through the sheet, but, like, what else are you going to get?
Yeah.
You know, that's part of it is, like, you know, if you lost some pitchers, who the heck else are you really going for? You know, if you're not going for Lively and some of these other guys we might talk about, I just didn't see a ton of other names. So I am intrigued. You know, a guy who was available in a couple of my leagues, Ryan Nelson, just got hit by a comebacker yesterday.
Yeah.
Kind of takes him off the board if things don't go well. So
part of it is a lack of options. I was watching the game last night when Nelson got hit by the comebacker. And it wasn't
what was funny to you was that he got hurt. You
yeah. Well, the comebacker was funny, but not because he got hit, but because, like, it was 87 miles an hour, the comebacker. So, like, it wasn't like
blasted.
It wasn't black. Like, he wasn't hitting.
I don't
want to
get hit with 87. But yeah,
that's what's
crazy.
Funny because in my head I go, it was only 87.
Yeah.
If you got hit by an 87 mile an hour fastball,
my bones would shatter.
Yeah. Like, I would just crumple over.
I would disintegrate.
Like, yeah. But, like, for some reason, because it's not 110 miles an hour.
That's hilarious. Yeah. We're like
that. Yeah, bro. I'm like, yeah, wasn't
did
that
did you
bad.
Have to come out?
Yeah,
did you?
Right?
Are you kind of a bitch? You want to?
My wife hits me with, like, a punch that's probably moving 30 miles an hour. I'm like, oh, baseball at 87. And I'm like, oh, what a
It
wimp.
Would fold me. It would absolutely fold me. And again, I'm pretty sure my bones would disintegrate and turn into Red Bull dust. It would be rough. Wade Miley, I'm a sucker for him. Greg tried to talk me out of it last week. He was unsuccessful. So my dumbass already has Wade Miley on a team. Doesn't mean I'm going to start him. I'm just saying he's already on the crew. What are you doing,
Wade Miley? You didn't start him this week, right?
What are you doing with Wade Miley?
Oh, my God. You started him. What are you doing?
Starting Wade Miley is what I'm doing. Shut the fuck
up. Oh, my God. Oh, no.
I don't win. Hey, he's on a good team. I need some wins, bro. Leave me alone. I'm doing the same thing as I did last year. Where I don't get
well
wins.
And go deep enough into a game to qualify for a win.
All right. Listen here. It was only the second start, so you can get me on that part. But in terms of the performance, I want to take up for my boy Wade Miley. Since 21, 320 innings of a 3.26 ERA and a 1.24 WHIP. Gets the job done, my man. 23-13 record in the 60 outings as well. Should I have started him already? No. Maybe should have seen a little something first. Where are we at next week, though, at Pittsburgh, home to New York? I imagine that's a hard no from you.
Yeah,
but do, do you not respect Miley at all with what he's been able to do last several years?
I'm not going to say he wasn't on my waterfalls. You know, like I put some $3 bids, but I wasn't going to start him this week. Now, unlike you, I have a team with really, really good pitchers on it. So I don't.
What the fuck's that supposed to mean?
I don't need to worry about it as much. But yeah, no, I just. Especially until I see him go five, I'm probably not starting.
My other option was Griffin Canning, and I was nervous. Which would have
been a good decision.
It would have been nice to pick him on the rebound, but he'd been getting cooked. How was I supposed to know he's going to finally throw his first good outing of the year?
Yeah, no, I understand. That's a tough choice.
So
I probably would have gone Canning, but I honestly can't really blame you if that were your option for.
And I got to be honest. I just lost Darvish in that league. So I don't know if Miley's coming out. I think he might have to stay in. This team is exploding.
Is this the first main or the second main?
This is the second main.
Oh, yeah.
Where the pitching was already a bit suspect, let's say, because I waited on it.
Staff ace, Tanner Bibee.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the options that I'm looking at, hey, I could get Patrick Sandoval, so I could have two Angels. The exact thing I was trying to avoid this year was to not be overstuffed on Angels. Michael Lorenzen's available in that league. Swerving Jake Irvin. Swerving Cole Irvin. So, yeah, I mean, the options are not robust out there. So let me just...
Well,
me just
Jake Irvin has the Dodgers, so let's not do that.
We're definitely not doing that.
Griffin Canning has the Orioles. And
Canning already has to start. It's whether or not Miley...
Sandoval has the Twins, so I think I would take the Twins over that Miley 2 start.
Okay, I have to get
the other option.
Lorenzen, did you say
Lorenzen is, home versus Cincinnati.
I could go to our good friend, the gardener, Mr. Kyle Gibson.
Kyle Gibson has, he's home versus Arizona. I don't think I would do that.
I don't really want to do that either. So, yeah, it's not great out there for me. So, Wade Miley, you're in. But I understand not being terribly interested in him. You might have to be, though. Chris Paddock, White Sox and at L.A. You know, he kind of gets – maybe it's my perception. I don't want to project this onto everybody. But, like, being part of a good rotation where I'm kind of generally interested in a lot of their guys maybe sometimes elevates other people. Like, I think I'm maybe holding Louis Varland in a little bit higher regard than he needs to be right now because he's not really gotten off the ground. And same with Paddock. Because they're with Lopez, Ober, and Ryan, where I'm like, yes, I'm automatic on those guys. I feel like I'm maybe kind of elevating Paddock beyond his level. Which, by the way, I think he got pushed. Oh, wait, no. He was on a two-start episode a while ago.
Yeah.
So this is his second go round on a two start. Where are we? It hasn't gone well. It's an 8% swing strike rate, the lowest of his career for Chris Paddock. 12% or 13% K rate. The results are brutal. Are you seeing any sign of hope here after three starts from Chris Paddock? And by the way, it was one really awful start and two bleh ones against the Dodgers and Brewers for Paddock.
So I didn't think it was so much about, like, at least for the industry as a whole, Paddock in terms of like, oh, he's on a good rotation, so we kind of just lumped together the other guys. I feel like it's because, like, in the 2019 preseason, he was the player everybody was talking about. Whether you were in or out, he was, like, the guy everybody was talking about. And then, like...
It was the big spring training, like, stuff, right?
Uh-huh, he was the rookie that was going to come up. And I remember, I think Derek Carty was really big on him, and
Who was big on him was Matt Modica.
Yeah, Matt Modica, like Mark Cerebro was like in my first ever main event, that 2019 main event, and he took Paddock. And I remember talking to him after. I was like, I just don't understand like the Paddock love. And he was really, really good for 140 innings. And I just think that everybody remembers that, and for some reason kind of forgets the last 3 years have been a disaster. There's nothing in the skills that tell me that things are going to get much better for him. I mean, he'll have higher strikeout rate than 12% or 13% where it's at. But like,
sure.
I just don't know if he's the same guy anymore. And I think we need to stop thinking of him as like, oh, he used to be really good. That was 5 years ago.
It was quite some time ago. You're not wrong.
And it was only for 140 innings. It wasn't like he was really good for 3 or 4 years. He was good for, the better part of a season. So at this point, no, I'm not starting Paddock. I actually dropped him in a number of leagues where I had him.
So even with the White Sox there,
I can understand, again, like in a 15-team league, like I can totally understand rolling with it because you may not, like if you're going, well, it's either Paddock or Kyle Gibson, probably going Paddock.
If it's the same situation that I've got with like the Miley stuff, where it's like, I kind of gotta. But absent that, this does pass the old, like, if you're not starting in a two-step, it might just be time to say goodbye.
If you're not starting two-step with the Chicago White Sox in it, yes.
Then get rid of Paddock. Yeah. Yep. Okay, cool. That's where I'm at as well with him. Paul Blackburn and J.P. Sears, the Oakland guys. Oakland, by the way, this is a good lesson, at least it was for me, in like how small records can be deceiving. When they were 8-11, when I was doing my box score show yesterday, I was like, 8-11, they're not too bad. Off the top of your head, unless you're really good at math in your head, which I'm not, what does that pace to for a full season?
8-11, that probably paces to just somewhere around like 70 and 92.
Okay, yeah, so you're smart. I'm a moron. Because I was like, they're not doing too bad. And then I saw it was a 68-win pace. In fairness, that's exactly what I thought they would be this year, which is a standard bad team, aka upper 60s for Oakland. But in my brain, for some reason, 8-11, only 3 games under, I was like, that's pretty close to 500, which I guess it kind of
it is.
But over the course of the year, I guess 68 wins is kind of
close. Well, but I mean, we were just talking about like what Houston's like 6-13. Like, we don't think they're a bad team and they're 6-13. Like, the records mean like so little right now.
Exactly. They can be very deceiving. My bottom line is I'm a dumbass.
Yeah. No, we knew that.
Which, again, well-known fact. Yeah. Exactly. But anyway, so they are more of a run-of-the-mill bad team as opposed to a disgustingly putrid bad team. But can you get anything out of Sears or Blackburn here with the East Coast double dip at the Yankees and O's? My guess is no, but I'm curious your thoughts on these two.
I mean, I don't have a problem starting them necessarily because I think they're both pitching really well. These are really tough matchups, and so you're not going to get wins, right? Like, and I think this is what we talked about yesterday with Blackburn was like, hey, like, if you need volume, I get it. Because he, what did I say? I think of his 24 starts, he's only had five or six starts since the beginning of last season where he's given up 5 or more earned runs. So, like, yep. If you need the volume and you're willing to take the gamble, I don't necessarily have a problem with it. But when I'm looking at matchups and I'm going, man, like the chances that either of these guys are going to get a win out of these four starts, like I don't usually love to risk it. But especially if you're in deeper leagues, like you may not have other options. I've got Sears as one of my guys in my main event. And like, I'm going to have to make a decision on like him versus Brandon Fott. And I don't know which way I'm going to go. So I don't know. I honestly really don't know what I'm going to do. I also have Patrick Sandoval on this team. So like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's not easy. God, I wish Sears, like his results have been solid. 435, 116. Yeah. That's not bad for a deeper league. The skills are hilariously bad. He has a 0 strikeout minus walk. As many walks as he does strikeouts, 9 apiece. So I don't love that. And Blackburn has the sparkling results, 108 ERA, 1 whip, but only a 10% strikeout minus walk, which isn't terribly impressive either. It's better than a 0, but it's not great. So, I can get there in a deep league with these guys. If you're in an extreme situation, kind of like the one I was outlining with my Miley team, but I would try not to. Like, I think this is going to be Blackburn's regression week. It makes a lot of sense to get knocked around here, get his ERA back up to like the upper 3s, low 4s, perhaps. And then we can kind of see where he's at from there.
Sears is really interesting too. So like when you said like he's walking so many guys, like I'm like, all right, let's go look at the underlying skills. Is he just not getting into the zone? No, he's got an over 50%, almost 51% zone rate, right? We said league average is 42 and like a couple percentage points is a lot. Like,
yeah.
I'm guessing, I think part of it is their hitters are just spitting on stuff out of the zone.
So anytime he leaves the zone, they're like...
Like, they're just like, no, I'm not. He's got, 28% O-swing. Like, that's not what you want to see. Mm-mm. So that is not very encouraging because while he hasn't given up, like, a ton of home runs, he's only given up a home run in one game, and two home runs in that one game. I feel like if hitters are just spitting on stuff that's outside of the zone, he's going to give up home runs. And with that walk rate, yeah, I'm starting to bring a thought over Sears.
Yeah, I think that's what you got to do here. Yeah. It's almost impressive that his results have even been that good for JP Sears because the skills are so sporadically weird. Blackburn makes a bit more sense, kind of riding the hot BABIP and left on base rate, but it will come crashing down. Be careful here. I don't mind. If you really like these guys and like you got some love for them for some reason, holding them through the two-step and not cutting them if you don't use them. But I'm certainly not rushing out. I'm looking for ways to not use them. I'm trying to bend over backwards to not use them here. Taiwan Walker, I put perhaps because we don't know.
Well, hold on. You skipped Jose Quintana.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jose Quintana, back to him.
He's so boring that
home to St. Louis. No, I'm sorry. I just missed. I like Jose Quintana. He's Wade Miley-esque to me. So we know I like those kinds of guys. No, it's a me problem for sure. But I do like him. His skills have been rough though this year too. He's another one with like, good ERA 3.05, but then a 150 whip because of just a 6% strikeout minus walk. Uncharacteristic walk spike here for Jose Quintana. Is it real? Is this going to be the problem? And are you going for him against your Giants and at home to the Cardinals?
The underlying skills are really bad. And I don't know that the walk rate is an aberration. He's got a 36% zone rate.
Jeez. And
with that, a 24% O swing.
It's
unreal bad. Like, I don't know what's going on. Maybe he's just finally cooked, but, or maybe he is just trying to nibble too much and he's just not getting any calls. Now, to his defense, like, he hasn't had like above a 37% zone rate pretty much since like 2018 or 2019. So like what he does, but he usually gets 33-36% O swings along with it. So maybe he's like, hey, I'm going to go out of the zone, but you're going to chase and people just aren't chasing it. I don't know if this is an attack change by hitters but something's got to change because you can't keep walking this level of guys.
No, that is way too many walks. For Jose Quintana, and it will cut into his ability to be successful as it has already if he doesn't fix something. So
on the plus side, the Giants have been mediocre versus left-handed pitching this year, and the Cardinals have been atrocious versus it.
That's what I was going to say. There's 15s where I'm still getting there because I might not have any other options.
Like I would start him over Sears.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not fully out on this with our boy, Jose Quintana here. By the way, did you see the Mets City Connects?
No.
I think they suck.
Black
and gray. I don't know.
Have you seen the Philadelphia Phillies ones?
Yeah. I didn't really like the still,
I got a bunch of friends who are Phillies fans who were like, I got text message. They're like, what is MLB doing? I was like, what do you think I have to do with this? Like, you're blaming me.
What is your league doing? Change your league.
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. Those are gross.
Yeah, I don't love these Mets ones. I really hope the Tigers ones are cool. I will get some cool stuff if it's cool, but we'll see. I think the Cardinals ones could be cool. I'm not like a huge Cardinals fan or anything. Still, I'm still pissed about 2006, but with their logo and the red, I think they could do something really cool. I like embracing the colors and, like, you know, really showing off your best color. Like, that's why I like the San Diego one so
much.
But
that to me, like, that's why I like the Phillies one was so weird. I was like, where does this color scheme come from?
That I don't know. Maybe it's something that has to do with the city. Like, sometimes there's historical stuff there that I'm like, oh, okay, I respect that, even if I don't like it. For example, the Boston Marathon one. Like, I roasted
that one so hard before I knew what it was.
Well,
I still think they're ugly as fuck.
Well, I was judging personally. Like, I don't look good in yellow. It basically looks like a skin shirt for me. So I just was never going to wear it. But I'm like, okay, that's a cool thing that they're paying tribute to, the Boston Marathon there.
I do love the Padres ones. Like,
the Padres
ones
is my favorite, that hat.
Like, yeah.
The jersey, my favorite jersey is Miami's with that red. That beautiful red is amazing. But yeah, I don't love these Mets ones. Sorry, Mets fans. And then the Phillies ones. I like the hat, but then the whole uniform at the uniform as a whole did not work for me. Anyway, thank you for reminding me about Jose Quintana. Let's go back to Taiwan Walker here. And I put perhaps because I guess we don't know for sure, because he is working his way back from the IL. But if he is back in time, then he does slate for a two-step. It's at Cincy and at San Diego. So welcome back, Taiwan.
Yeah, okay. I don't love starting guys coming off of the IL, just generally speaking. It's very rare. Like, I'm making an exception today for Justin Verlander, right?
I was just about to ask
Justin Verlander, and it's versus the Nationals.
Yep.
But unless it's a good pitcher versus a really bad team, I usually just miss it just because I don't want to risk.
And I think that's fair. Like, what about Jordan Montgomery today against your Giants?
I didn't start him in any of my, like, weekly leagues. I'm trying to think if I've got him in a daily format, if I would start him. I might start him.
You know, I kind of highlighted...
You know what? I don't think I would. He did not pitch really well in his minor league rehab start. So I think I would pass on it.
Neither did Verlander. I don't know how indicative that is. But I'm with you. What I said in my SP chart was, like, everyone has their own way of playing these situations, which I totally respect. If you're a don't start guys off the IL or in this weird instance of Montgomery and Snell, you know, starting super late, totally respect it. I'm more open to playing them. So I'm going to go for it, but I totally like that people kind of have their, there's no right way to do this, I think. Because you could miss a gem and maybe you're fine with that. You just want to see something. Totally understand that. So with Walker, I can't do it at Cincy and at San Diego. What about stashing Walker? Do you have interest in that in like a 15? Would you go for him if he's available and then just hold?
I think I would. Okay. I mean, it's a good team. I've liked his skills in the past. I know last year was kind of was pretty bumpy in Philadelphia, but he was nicked up a lot. The problem is he's always nicked up. He's always Taiwan Walker is just always injured. But I think you could do worse in terms of a stash play.
Yeah, I think so too, and that's why I am inclined to give Taiwan Walker a shot. Always been a fan too, so that's part of it. Is I just have, you know, some bias toward him that I'm willing to play. But again, we're not going to start this one here. If you do pick him up, just park him and kind of see where it goes, because it could be some nice pitching depth and you could snake some wins on that ball club. And he lines up for San Francisco the following week. So if he has a nice two-step, you get San Francisco at home and you feel better about that. Bailey Falter doing anything for you, Milwaukee and at San Francisco in the deeper formats?
No, I mean, Bailey Falter is who he is. Like, he's...
Yeah. I mean, he's had, like, some good starts.
Yeah, but he just gets no strikeout. Like, the upside is so limited with Falter.
But you can get wins. Like, the reason I put him on the list was because, like, now you have a reasonable expectation of maybe snaking a win with Pittsburgh, whereas normally you wouldn't start a back-end type reliever on Pittsburgh in a two-step because you're not going to get the wins, you're not going to get the Ks. But you could snake a win here, maybe two, and he only had one bad start.
But he's also like he's got a 180 BABIP right now. Like, he's
that, like, will he gives sustain.
Him so, yeah, If that sustains, then like it's a Bryce Elder type season, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Where it just continues to go.
The like, funny thing is, somebody will sustain some crazy shit like that, but we have no idea who.
Yeah.
You can't bet on every one of these types.
And in spite of the fact that like he gets out of innings quickly and stuff, like he's only gone five the last two games with that, you know, these minuscule BABIPs. So like, I don't know that he will qualify for a win normally speaking, because like you've got to think that BABIP luck is going to change for the, you know, the worse here pretty soon. Absolutely. So I'm not interested in Bailey Falter.
I can't get there either. Again, it is cool that you can maybe say, you know, that he can get some wins in Pittsburgh, but I'm not taking that risk.
Of Bailey Falter is the last name, like giving you some potentially cool team names.
Absolutely.
Like you could bear him with the next guy and be like Falter to a win.
Yes, because Keaton Wynn does have a great last name for a pitcher there. And he gets the Mets and Pittsburgh both at home. So the home two-step, obviously great park to pitch in. Solid pitcher. Curious where you stand on Keaton Wynn.
It's interesting because like he was one of the guys that like, you know, was really in on because he had like a really amazing stuff plus metrics, but he just gives it so much contact that like it's, I mean, I don't want to like compare him to Dustin May because like I don't think he's got Dustin May's type of like nastiness, but like May's one of those guys who's like, hey, he's like off the charts and stuff plus, but he can't get swings and misses because he gives up so much contact. And yeah. Wynn has kind of done the same thing this year. And so while I'm not necessarily opposed to using him for this two-step because he does have, you know, the Mets on the front half of it, and they're both at home, which is good, you know, good park to pitch in. Though, I mean, all three of these teams have good parks to pitch in. I just don't know if the upside is there. The Giants don't seem to be playing very well, especially the offense isn't playing very well. And so I worry about his ability to even get wins, and strikeouts aren't coming right now. So I'm probably steering away from Keaton Wynn outside of, you know, I don't have a better option at 15.
Yeah, I think, you know, painted into a corner situations like we've highlighted, you know, with the Miley stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm a little bit more in because both are at home too. And I think... because Keaton Wynn could have been one of your dudes, you know, like that concept I was talking about earlier. I can see it. 15s only, though. I'm not getting there at 12s. I don't really think in any way, shape, or form. So let's say 52-48 to the yes. It's very little. Basically a coin toss, but I give a little boost toward the yes because it's at home. And by the way, you know, we early on, first like 10 days, we were picking on the Mets. Now their offense has picked it up too. So you don't even feel necessarily that great about that portion of it. What about our boy, our staple, Lance Lynn, Arizona and at the Mets? Again, the Mets one, not like the comforting one. Again, couple rosters that are solid lineups, but you're not overly terrified. Lynn can make a home run haven out of any lineup, though. What do we think of our boy?
Yeah, I mean, he gave up three home runs versus the Marlins.
lineup.
His game log is crazy, right? So he goes and shoves against the Dodgers for four innings, four scoreless innings where he only gave up, you know, four hits, one walk, no home runs, right? He goes and faces the Marlins and gets beat up, gives up three home runs. He goes and faces Philadelphia. He walks a few too many guys, but no home runs, no earned runs in five innings. And then he gives up a home run versus Oakland. Like, I don't know what Lance Lynn is. Lance Lynn doesn't know what Lance Lynn is. He really doesn't like bunts.
He really does not like bunts.
And maybe that was it. He was just upset about the bunting, and that's why he gave up so many home runs in Miami. But this is like a 15, like, team, like, hold your breath and pray. Like, this could go just so poorly.
That's the thing. You got to go in eyes wide open all the time. with...
No, with Lance Lynn, you should be shutting your eyes and praying to whatever deity or universe.
Yes, I understand what you're saying there, but I mean you go in understanding that there's heavy risk here, and so you kind of can't gripe about it if it happens, right? Like, you're taking the plunge, fully understanding that he could give up 5 home runs in a week, which is a lot for those that are unaware.
I didn't draft Lance Lynn on very many teams this year because...
Okay, not very many, but you do have him on at least one, right?
I think a couple, maybe one or two DCs, something like that.
It'd be crazy if you didn't have him anywhere.
Yeah, but what I did was I attached a shock collar to myself. And every time the Lance Lynn time came up, I would just shock the hell out of myself and be like, you know, I had to do something.
Finally get yourself to stop, yeah.
Yeah, because I know the ERA looks good right now. But that 2.11 ERA is coming with a 1.33 WHIP. Like, it's like that is about as fraudulent as you could have.
It's the Lance Lynn experience, and mm-hmm. I will say this: you know, we make jokes, but like when we've been in the past, the skills have been a bit more ironclad. Like the swing and strike rate's down 3 points to 10%, and the strikeout rate's down to 22% as a result. When we were going for him more, the Ks were there so that you could really feel confident that you were at least going to get that. So, yeah, I lean away. In 15s, it is a 60-40, yes, because, again, you just might not have any other options. And then in 12s and 10s, you can't be doing it. I want to talk Zach Littell for the shallower leagues, just see where you're at with him. Is he somebody that kind of gets the full start treatment? Now, I know this matchup is going to make him very intriguing for the shallower league, so I think you're going to say yes there. But I'm curious, on neutral or even more difficult matchups, is Zach Littell somebody who's in the lineup? Like, does he need to be off this list where we don't even ask about him? What are your thoughts after 4 more starts of Zach Littell?
Okay, so I need to correct myself. The ERA WHIP disparity was not actually Lance Lynn. It was Zach Littell. I had Littell's page up already.
Oh, there is a big ERA WHIP disparity for Lynn, though.
For Lynn as well, but not as big.
Okay, 218, 121.
Littell is 214 ERA and a 1.33 WHIP. Okay. Which is what I just said for
so he Lynn, gets so. Detroit White Sox. So again, it's a yes, right?
Mm-hmm.
For this week,
absolutely.
In all formats, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Because that WHIP is a little fraudulent. Like, he's got a massive BABIP right now, a 361 BABIP.
Okay, so you think the WHIP will come down, not the ERA going up to match it for a little?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ERA goes up too, but like, I think that WHIP should probably be in like the 115 range and not in the 1.33 range.
So then, like mid threes, what with a 1.15, you could see for Littell. Okay.
Yeah. And I like this 25% strikeout rate. Like, maybe it doesn't say quite that high, but like, I think he's a 22-23% guy with the way he's been pitching.
Most of the time start, right? Like, very rare instances, even in shallow leagues, where you're taking Littell out, I think.
Yeah, for right now. So, like, when I do my 2-star pitching article, you know, I said like I've got my 5 different tiers that I kind of fit guys in. He's going to be in the should start tier. He's not a must start, but he's definitely a should start at this point.
Mets next week too, or the following week after the 2-star.
Yeah, I'm probably rolling with him for that too.
Yeah, even in shower formats. Okay, so he's probably going to graduate if he pops off these next 3 starts and has a 2-step the following week. You might not hear Littell discussed because we might just be in the auto zone with him. John Gray, love him. But man, does he frustrate me. But he gets Seattle and Cincy at home. He's obviously on a good team, so win potential's there. I think it's an easy yes in 15s. If you're rostering him, you got to start him. So I'm more curious on the 12s and where you stand with John Gray.
Oh man, that walk rate just scares the crap out of me.
It's uncharacteristically high, though. Do you think there's some elements that are backing it up as high?
I mean, he is going outside of the zone a little bit more this year than he ever has in his career. So it's down to 41%, which is below league average. He's always been above league average in terms of zone rate. And at the same time, he's not getting as many swings outside of the zone. So I think that is kind of what is going on. I just don't know if he's got the stuff to survive if he just starts filling up the zone. unless he like he goes full Robbie Ray and goes, I'm going to fill up the zone all the time. Mm-hmm. So the problem is like you don't, you know, like when we talk about in a dynasty league, you either want to be trying to be really competitive or just, yes. you know, go full. You don't want to play the middle game. And I think for a guy like Gray, he doesn't want to play the middle game of like, oh, sometimes I'm going to fill up the zone, sometimes I'm not. Either just don't or do because like you don't want to give up home runs with the giant walk rate.
Exactly.
Like, so I like John Gray. I mean, I always have. Health has always been his kind of major issue, but those walks are, yeah, they're pretty concerning for me because I do think home runs will come at some point and could come this week. Like you said, I think in 15s, you're probably starting John Gray, but in 10s and 12s, I don't know that I would.
Yeah, 15s, it's a definite yes for me. 12s, it's situational. 10s, you're going to have somebody better. Like, I'm not even sure it needs to be rostered in 10s.
Would you rather for this week, with guys that we've talked about, would you rather start John Gray or Paul Blackburn? So I think I'm starting Blackburn.
Okay, we're going to differ there. I'm going to go with
Gray. Brandon Thought or John Gray?
Oh, that one's tough. I'm going to go Gray both at home, but that one's really close.
Yeah, I think I'm going Thought there.
Okay, so we got a couple disagreements there. So there you go with those guys.
Joe Ross. They're all starting Gray.
Gray. We found one for you to join on the Gray train. And this is another guy who could be graduating soon, but I just want to check in again. Let me see the last time we discussed this guy. It's Yusei Kikuchi. While I look him up, he gets at KC and home to the Dodgers. So a team that's on the rise that we're putting in that respect but not fear train, and then a team that we desperately fear. And we have not talked about Kikuchi so far this year. 33% K rate. Career best, 9% walk rate. That is up 2 points from last year, but not unmanageable. 208 ERA, 115 WHIP, and that's with a 320 BABIP. So he's outrunning that BABIP because he's keeping the ball in the park again. What are we doing with Kikuchi? 15s, I think it's an automatic, even with the Dodgers. So I'm curious where you're at in 12s with Yusei Kikuchi.
You're not scared of the Royals too? I mean, these are
I respect them, but in 15s, how do you get away?
I don't know.
Who's got a rotation good enough to sit Yusei Kikuchi after? Because again, this would be somebody who was one of your dudes if you drafted. Mm-hmm. Generally, people don't just land on him because they believed he's performing, and now you're going to sit him. I understand that with the Dodgers, it's really tough. So I think 15s, it's an automatic. So
he's thrown three straight gems. The first start he threw this year was shaky. But since then, he has been fantastic. Like, I don't know how you don't start him here. I think
do you get there in 12s with Kikuchi, though?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I do, too.
I mean, the Dodgers scare you.
Of course.
But
and KC does, too, even in KC. Yeah. Again, because as we've talked throughout this year, KC, not the hitters or the pitcher's park that we've believed it to be. It's a home run suppressing park, which does help Kikuchi. The other hits get elevated to make it an overall plus hitting park. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think you got a roll here. I think it's another one where you're kind of in for the ride, not at the same degree as Hunter Green because he didn't pay that type of price. But if you joined this ride, ride it.
Yeah, he's not a must start. So again, when I write up my article later today, it'll be like he won't be in the must start tier, but he'll be a should start. Like, and that'll give him the opportunity to write him up and stuff. So, but yeah, I think you should probably roll with him.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at with Yusei Kikuchi. And it's somebody I didn't super believe in coming into the year because I still worried about the homers. He's suppressing them again this year with just a 7% homer to fly ball. Will that regress? I don't know. The ground ball rate is way up, though, 51% career best. Like, he might be turning a corner, and there is real breakout potential here with Yusei Kikuchi if he keeps that up. So there you go. There's the two steps for next week. A lot of difficult decisions out there. Process over results. You study, you do your stuff. Not everything's going to work out perfectly with these. So just make sure that you understand the risk. If they're available on the waiver wire, they're there for a reason, meaning that they have some inherent risk. So sometimes you're going to make some bad decisions on two steps. Don't forget that it's a long season. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Maybe I'm just talking in a mirror to myself for starting way too early. But... it's okay, Paul. You can start Wade Miley. You're still a good fantasy player. I swear.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Remember, I like the 0601 had like the Wandy line.
Yes.
I think the Wade Miley line is the line of a good fantasy player.
Don't you? And you so
the Miley well,
that line. Means he straddles it then.
No, if
that
you,
means he's sometimes
if,
yes?
If you are using Wade Miley, then you are
oh,
not.
Oh, oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I disagree.
That's the line.
I will put up again his 2021 through 2023 for Wade Miley, and I will say he's a good pitcher. So fuck you. How about that?
I can only think of that that picture of him like milking the cow.
He's my country boy. You leave him alone. He went to southeastern Louisiana. That's where he went to school, and he's going to milk the cow and throw six strong for me. I cannot wait till Wade Miley has a great two-step next week or a disastrous one. We'll see. Are you getting together with Justin or Jason? God damn it, I do that.
I will definitely be getting together with Justin, but I should be getting together with Jason, I think.
Okay. Well, you guys have a great episode.
I will double-check, but yeah.
We will be back on Monday talking about something cool. I don't know what yet, but yeah. It'll be something cool. So have a good one, Justin. Good talking with you.
Take it easy.